So just to finish out, we're going to talk a lot in this series about checkpoint inhibitor toxins. We can talk about it all day long, but I was kind of curious, as checkpoint inhibitors have come into the gynecologic oncology area, different patient, different situation, kind of how it's playing out. And I guess one thing I was kind of curious about, Jenny, is one of the things that we hear from the other melanoma, lung cancer, bladder, et cetera, is the issue of dermatologic skin problems with checkpoint inhibitors, which we hear are fairly common, but not usually that difficult to manage. What are your experience with dermatologic problems, Jenny?
I don't honestly see that many rashes or anything. And if it is, it's usually mild. I don't know what maybe Paula has seen more.
I think you see it more with IPI as opposed to Pembro. So yeah. I think most of us are just using Pembro in their gynecological
malignancy. Right. I mean, certainly I've seen them, but not
very mild.
Yeah,
that's what we've heard, that they've been mild. We talked about the thyroid problems. Another issue that is not that common but is seen, I think you all referred to it before, there are a couple more serious problems. Colitis, which can occur with checkpoint inhibitors. And for example, if you have a patient on pembro-lenvatinib, is it the pembro or lenvatinib that's going to cause a diarrhea? Because lenvatinib can do that as well, so that could be a problem. But the other thing, Dave, is the issue. We know you can see autoimmune pneumonitis. And of course, again, you guys are sort of just getting started with checkpoint inhibitors. You don't have volumes and volumes of patients the way lung cancer, and you see all these things, not to mention that they have other issues going on in their lungs. But I am curious, Dave, if you have any thoughts about this thing, because one of the things we're starting to hear about is the confusion of working up a patient with a pulmonary problem. Now, again, on Thursday, we're going to talk about lung cancer, much more complicated. But the fact that now COVID-19 is starting to enter into the equation. Dave, any comments?
Well, you know, literally while we were on the prep for this call, I had a call from my nurse practitioner with this exact scenario, presented with increasing shortness of breath, cough, and fever. And so we immediately sent her in for COVID testing, which was negative, and now presumed pneumonitis. So she's literally undergoing the workup and evaluation at this time. But with the availability in most centers, large centers at least, with the availability of COVID testing at this point and the turnaround being faster, you can really do these in series depending on your concern. Put them in isolation, rule out COVID, and start your workup of pneumonitis. Obviously, you do not want to start high-dose steroids if they have a COVID infection. So with that, it really can be done. Would I not start an immune therapy because of concern for COVID? Absolutely. I would give the patient the IO if it was indicated and deal with the potential risk of ruling out COVID.
So I'll tell you, the four of you, something that a lot of the people in the audience know, which is on, speaking of COVID, on Thursday when we did CLL, Dr. Jeff Sharman from US Oncology was about to publish a paper. He wouldn't talk about it because it was published on Friday. It was the use of ibrutinib to treat COVID-19. So we couldn't get him to talk about it, but we did an interview. So if you go back to our podcast that I told you about before, Oncology Today is 30 minutes of Jeff Sharman from Thursday night talking about ibrutinib to treat people in the ICU on ventilators with COVID-19. Not CLL, not cancer, awesome. COVID-19. So take a listen to that. You want to hear something really interesting. Anyhow, let's finish out with another case, another jump into reality. And Jenny, you have a 35-year-old woman who's a personal trainer. What happened with her?
Yeah, so in the interest of time, I'll just kind of briefly go through. So she presented with some postcoital bleeding. She eventually got a biopsy of her cervix and was found to have cervical cancer. She underwent her surgery and was on active surveillance. Unfortunately, she did recur about a year and a half, 2 years later. And it was sort of a big recurrence, unfortunately. So she was pretty symptomatic. She went on Ipi-Nivo, speaking of rashes, and she did have one, mild rash, mild fatigue, mild cough.
We should clarify that ipilimumab is another checkpoint inhibitor that was originally used in melanoma. And now research is being done with two checkpoint inhibitors. So she went on that trial.
She did, yeah. And she did pretty well for 5 months or so, just stable disease, but better quality of life than she had on chemotherapy. Unfortunately, she presented with some headaches and kind of some strange mental status changes. So we sent her for a brain MRI. It showed multiple brain mets. She was kicked off trial for that, unfortunately, but she did have positive PD-L1 staining. So we were able to give her pembrolizumab. She unfortunately passed away a couple months later, but I will say her quality of life while on the immunotherapy, although I don't know if it actually prolonged her life at all, it was better than it was on cytotoxic traditional chemotherapy. So that was kind of a blessing for her, I think.
I said it was a acalabrutinib in COVID-19, right? BTK inhibitor. Yes. Okay. Because somebody in the chat room said I didn't mention the name. Yeah, it was acalabrutinib. Anyhow, anything you want to say about this woman tragically dying of the disease?
It's cervical cancer is such a sad, sad disease. And, you know, when it comes back, it's terrible. And she was young. She's 30. She's around my age. She had kids. So I really felt for her and related to her. And as nurses, this is what we do. We get them through. We, as Paula said earlier, let them die with dignity. And that's part of being an oncology nurse.
Any comment, Dave? I guess theoretically, you could say this was a potentially preventable cancer.
I'm losing my hair on this, Neil. I think that this disease is preventable. I'm so sick of watching 30-year-old women die of metastatic cervical cancer. It is where our options, vaccines should be given. You know, it's now indicated up to age 45. This is disease that we can prevent, and we need to remember that it's a cancer prevention vaccine. That's it.
Also, and someone in the chat room mentioned pap smears in terms of earlier detection. Any final comments, Jenny, about taking care of this patient?
I would just say, like all oncology patients, everyone sort of has their goals with life, and hers was to stay active. She was a personal trainer. Unfortunately, she got a psoas muscle mass that prevented her from doing a lot, but we were able to coach her through. And I think that's really the privilege of taking care of these patients, getting them through their lives, and whether they're short or long, it's really been a privilege.
So thank you, the faculty, for such a great job tonight. Thank you all for attending.